This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Over the last week, we've been hearing from negotiators at the COP27 summit about how nations need to come together to address climate change and about compensating developing countries for the loss and damage involved with climate change. But consider when your entire culture is built on your relationship with the environment you live in. That's the case of indigenous people, many of whom have been displaced from their ancestral lands, first by colonization, and now increasingly by a shifting climate. Earlier this year, I spoke with Dr. Jessica Hernandez, an indigenous environmental scientist, community advocate, and postdoctoral fellow at the University of Washington. She's the author of a book about how environmental science, as practiced in Western institutions, should be paying more attention to the knowledge of indigenous people if we want to solve environmental crises. The book is Fresh Banana Leaves, Healing Indigenous Landscapes Through Indigenous Science. Jessica, welcome to Science Friday.
Yeah, Wendell Paducci, thank you for having me.
Nice to have you. Do you think indigenous people view Earth differently from settlers in the U.S.?
I think so. And I think that when we trace that back, it kind of is traced back to the separation from humans from nature. When we look at conservation, when we look at how we practice environmental sciences, we are, you know, always told to kind of remove humans from the equation. And I think that, yeah, as a result of that, indigenous communities, we see our plants and our animals as our relatives, as opposed to, you know, economic resources or something that we can extract from.
So what you're saying is that Western conservation views people as the enemy of nature, where you're saying that we should be living in harmony with nature.
Yes, especially, you know, when we look back at our creation stories, our history since time immemorial, we have always had a close relationship with nature. But because, you know, colonization and all the organizations and frameworks it introduced, we have, you know, been taught to extract from nature. So as a result, yes, we have become the enemy of nature, but we need to kind of reclaim those relationships so that we can holistically steward and caretake for our lands and our landscapes in this world.
Let's go back to the title of your book, Fresh Banana Leaves. You start this book with the story of your father, who grew up in El Salvador, and his connection to the banana trees. Why is this story important to this question of indigenous people's relationship with land?
Yeah, I think the stories is very important because oftentimes, right, as indigenous peoples, we are told to get over our past histories, especially when we talk about genocide. And for my people, especially indigenous Mayan nations across Central America, genocide can be traced back to our parents or our grandparents' generation because, you know, genocide occurred during the Civil War that targeted indigenous communities that, you know, killed a lot of our children. And I think that tying it back to his story, he taught me that if we protect nature, nature protects us. And, you know, I laid the foundation of his story and how a banana tree actually saved his life when his guerrilla encampment was bombarded. He saw a bomb drop on this banana tree. And instead of, you know, the bomb igniting, he saw how the banana leaves kind of wrapped themselves to prevent the bomb from igniting. And I think that, you know, oftentimes we talk about our ancestors pray for us, but sometimes, you know, those ancestors are our plant and animal relatives. That was a story he always told me as a young girl. And I think that as I grew older, I started to comprehend the importance and the message behind that story and how it's manifested in my life today as an indigenous woman in the environmental sciences.
And that message is if we protect nature, nature protects us.
Yes.
Dr. Hernandez, when I introduced you, I gave a list of things you're up to, but how do you describe yourself and the work you do as an indigenous scientist who is also working with Western institutions?
Yeah, so why I, you know, use a persona of an indigenous scientist is because I use the Western sciences, the training that I have in the physical and environmental sciences to advocate, right, for the inclusion of indigenous ways of knowing that I refer to as indigenous science. And I think that oftentimes the term that we use a lot is traditional ecological knowledge. But when I have seen that being introduced into the environmental sciences, a lot of scientists kind of focus more on the traditional, and they continue to speak about indigenous peoples, our ways of knowing in the past tense. And the reason why I use the word science is because our knowledges have adapted. We have survived, you know, colonization. We're still surviving climate change impacts as we know, right, climate change is already impacting our indigenous communities. And I see it as a science, especially, you know, the way that science is formulated. We are still making questions. We're still making observations. It's just that the methods or the ways that we pass down our knowledge is very different than, you know, it's done in Western science, where you publish peer review articles, where you collect numerical, you know, data. And I think that is different, but in the same way, it's kind of still ongoing knowledge that adapts and formulates new knowledge as we speak today.
That's good to know. One example you write about is mill pass, which is a method of agriculture that your family in Oaxaca used to grow food while also taking care of the local ecosystem. How does this work?
Yeah, so milpas are more of a holistic agricultural system, right? When we compare it to Western agricultural systems that have introduced monocultural farming. So milpas have a diversity, a biodiversity in terms of plant species that are integrated into that system. And because it's very holistic and, you know, the plants have built a relationship with one another, it doesn't require much human labor. The only human labor that we have is tending it and caring for it, but, you know, with minimal human physical labor. And I think that milpas kind of shows the nuances of indigenous science, right? Because it's our elders teaching us since we're young to kind of, you know, talk to the plants, to communicate with the plants, to be in ceremony when we're harvesting. And I think that is a intergenerational experience, right? Because we have our elders and our toddlers working the milpas, and we have our adults, and that is a communal harvest, right? It's not a harvest where we take whatever we want. We only take what we need. And I think that has allowed me to see how in Western environmental sciences is totally the opposite, right? Because we take as much as we want instead of, you know, what we actually need.
And in terms of environmental science, I noticed reading your book that one big difference you talk about is how you relate to species that we call invasive, like the banana tree, which is native to Southeast Asia. Why aren't they invasive species as far as you are concerned?
So I was always taught as a young girl that they're not invasive species, that they're actually displaced relatives. And I think that that goes back to the first question, right? How as indigenous peoples, we view our environments where our animals and our plants are also our relatives. And I think that given that, you know, these are plants, they still have a spirit, they have become our displaced relatives. And, you know, in this case of banana trees, right, they have started to be incorporated into our traditional diets. Like if you have our tamales, we eat plantains. And I think that it shows the nuances and the relationship that as indigenous peoples, we embrace our displaced relatives. We don't, you know, use that rhetoric that can be harmful and that kind of separates humans from nature. Because looking at, you know, the restoration work that I have done, the conservation work that I have done, invasive species are always painted negatively. But a lot of people who are practicing both restoration and conservation, these are their relatives that they're talking about negatively, right? Because a lot of invasive species have European displacement, and that's something that many people also can tie their lineage and connections to as well.
One of the statistics you mentioned in your book is that indigenous people steward 80% of the world's biodiversity on just 25% of the land. And knowing that indigenous peoples are not all the same, do you think there's an explanation for why they're doing so well at taking care of ecosystems?
Yeah, when I always say that statistics, right, if we want to like validate why it's important to incorporate indigenous knowledges or indigenous science, you know, that's one of the data sets that, you know, can prove that point. And also the fact that in Latin America, we, you know, are home for 50% of the world's biodiversity. So I think that given that, you know, our knowledge systems have been integrated or generated since time immemorial, and we have always looked at our landscapes through a holistic lens, it allows us to kind of steward our lands, to understand what are the differences that are taking place, how is climate change impacting them. And I think that oftentimes when I talk about indigenous science and how that relates to storing or caretaking of our lands, I like to use the metaphor of looking at a puzzle, right? In indigenous science and ways of knowing, we're looking at the entire puzzle completed versus in Western science or Western ways of knowing, we focus only on two or three puzzle pieces. So we miss other things that are important for us to create more holistic frameworks and instill, you know, those conservation techniques that will look at the entire landscape as opposed to focusing on one species or one area that's not the entire landscape in itself.
I want to talk about conservation and national parks. You're right that this idea that originated in the United States but spread to countries like El Salvador and has led to even more displacement of indigenous people from their land. Please say more about that.
Yeah, so national parks, right, it was a framework created in the United States during Roosevelt's presidency. And as a result of that, oftentimes we forget the history of national parks, and that history is embedded in the violent displacement of the indigenous communities and peoples who were living in those lands that, you know, were decided that they were so pristine and beautiful that, you know, they wanted to package it in a national park. And when we talk about conservation in the national parks movement, it has, like, as you mentioned, it has spread all across the Americas. And in my home country, especially in our Maya Chorti territories, we have national parks that are, you know, embedded in our rainforest. And yet, when we look at our, you know, Maya Chorti or other indigenous communities, we don't have access to those national parks because they're being operated to generate tourism, to generate economic revenue for the country without, you know, supporting the indigenous communities who have the knowledge of stewarding and caretaking of those landscapes since time immemorial. So we see, again, in national parks, how we're continuing to separate humans from nature. And hopefully that's a history that, you know, we see in our lifetime being addressed so that we can actually be, you know, creating more just solutions and incorporate indigenous peoples into that framework.
You also write that instead of the word conservation, we should perhaps be thinking differently about environmental science, that healing might be a better word. Tell me why.
Yeah, so when I look at my native languages, Zapotec, and I talk about, like, conservation, right? There's no word that translates to conservation. Most of our words translate to healing. And I think that as a result of that, right, even as indigenous peoples, we always knew that post-colonization, we had to heal. And I think that, you know, going back to the discussion we were having on how humans have been separated from nature, a lot of us have a lot of healing to do, right? To reclaim those relationships, to reclaim, you know, living in harmony with nature. And I think that as a result of that, we had to heal a lot of layers, whether it be from colonization, whether it be layers that were exacerbated during the pandemic. And I think that as a result of that, in order for us to heal our landscapes, to heal climate change devastation that's taking place today, we also need to center the healing of ourselves, the healing of our communities and nation as we move forward.
This is Science Friday from WNYC Studios. In case you're just joining us, I'm talking with Dr. Jessica Hernandez, Indigenous Environmental Scientist, Postdoctoral Fellow, University of Washington, author of Fresh Banana Leaves, Healing Indigenous Landscapes Through Indigenous Science. So much to talk about here, so little time. I'm interested in learning a little bit more about what does healing indigenous landscapes look like in terms of practical steps?
Practical steps will be, like, you know, when we look at our relationship with invasive species, many of us have to, you know, reclaim those relationships with nature. So instead of, you know, just removing the invasive species very aggressively, we have to pray to it. We have to, you know, talk to it so that, you know, that species is okay with being removed. It's also having that intergenerational relationships, right? Because a lot of us are, you know, separated from our elders, we're separated from our cultures. So, you know, having the elders teach the young people is also a way to heal. And also having, you know, discussions, conversations, being in healing circles when we're doing that restoration work is also very helpful. And I think that through my work, I have been able to implement that. And you may be working 8 hours of, you know, physical labor, you know, removing our displaced relatives, those invasive species. But at the end of the day, you feel really relaxed because there was that healing components that were integrated into that, you know, physical labor work that was done.
Yeah. You feel satisfied.
Yes.
You feel like you've made a contribution.
Yes. And sometimes there's crying, right? Because you talk about, you know, especially when I have done restoration work with indigenous communities and my relatives, right? There's a lot of crying because there has been a lot of loss during the pandemic. And I think that, you know, we're able to be in nature and be with our environments when we're doing that healing, right? It's like peeling those layers while being in nature as well.
Yeah. Climate change is reaching what many scientists are describing as crisis levels. We call it a climate crisis, right? There is this consensus that action must happen soon if it is to be successful. Do you think world leaders are ready to take the time that might be necessary to also embark on this healing that you describe?
I think a lot of our world leaders are not ready. And I think that one of the discussions that I always bring to the forefront is how climate change is actually displacing indigenous peoples and is displacing them externally, right? And when we look at the immigration discourses, especially from, you know, world leaders that actually have power, that, you know, are the leaders of global dominant countries, immigration is very forceful, right? Like the immigration policies enacted are very harmful. We see how a lot of our Afro-Indigenous relatives from Haiti were actually treated when, you know, they have been displaced into the United States. And I think that because climate change is interconnected with displacement, and displacement is negatively, you know, seen as immigration, our world leaders are not necessarily equipped or ready to address the climate change impacts it's having on the global south, especially.
Mm-hmm. When people around the world think about how to envision their relationship with the land or with nature, what do you think we should be sure to keep in mind?
Yeah, I think that it's important to, you know, learn whose indigenous lands you're currently living on, and then doing that research, right? Because we know that indigenous histories, indigenous movements are often neglected, ignored, or silenced in mainstream discourses, and then researching how we can support those indigenous communities directly. And that would be like, you know, amazing reciprocal relationships being built with not just indigenous lands, but also the indigenous peoples of those lands.
Dr. Hernandez, thank you for taking time to talk with us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. And, you know, it was an honor to speak with you.
Dr. Jessica Hernandez is an indigenous environmental scientist and community activist. Her book is Fresh Banana Leaves, Healing Indigenous Landscapes Through Indigenous Science. And if you want to read an excerpt of the book, we've got it for you. Go to sciencefriday.com/healing to take a look. sciencefriday.com/healing. That conversation was recorded back in April.